Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very, very, very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out to Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. It's newbees.com. Well, I hope everybody had a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, whatever, Boxing Day, whatever it is that you may be celebrating over this time period. I hope it was great for you and that Santa Claus was good to you. While we didn't have all the girls here at the house for Christmas, we did have them a couple of days ahead of time, so it was good to see all of my babies. And for those of you who probably weren't or may not be on the Discord room, the happiest and most merry of Christmas news items or newsworthy things is that I'm probably about 5 months away from being a grandfather, so that's pretty crazy, pretty wild and crazy world that we're living in. Anyway, thank you all so much for your continued support of the show. I definitely appreciate everyone. Please check out the YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies. You can listen to the podcast there for commercial free, no commercials from me. If you don't have YouTube Premium, they will still hit you with the commercials that I get no credit for since I'm not monetized on YouTube. Sorry about that, but that is another option you can check out. Today's warm-up song is going to be Fortunate Son by Creedence Clearwater Revival. It ain't me. I ain't no senator's son. All right, so today we're going to talk about a laying worker and what a laying worker is within the hive. Somebody had reached out from Australia, so hello to you from my friends down under, and said, hey, I'm listening to the podcast, and I can't seem to find the episode about the laying worker. And I thought, hey, no problem. I'm doing a lot better of indexing episodes and keeping track of what's where and cataloging things so that it's easier to track things down. I start searching through all my notes and I can't find it. And I'm thinking, I know that I discussed the laying worker at some point in time. I think in a Bee Buzz, someone had asked the question like, hey, what do I do? And I very generically answered the question, but it deserves an entire episode because it's the solution to it and the way to address it isn't as simple as just, oh, just do this one thing every time and that's what always works. There's a lot of pheromone and behavioral and physical. There's a lot of things that are at play, a lot of moving parts to it. And I really want to explain it to everybody because I think it's one of those things where once you understand the underlying mechanics of what's going on, it'll make a lot more sense. It'll be a lot easier to deal with. I'll give you the strategies that I've used that have worked very well. I'll give you a few other strategies people have suggested that I'm not a huge fan of, but you know what? It's your hive. You do whatever you want with it, right? Your apiary, do it your way, and don't worry about what anybody else tells you. So anyway, after over five years of this podcast and having not covered laying workers, we're going to talk about that today. And hopefully we'll give you some of the tools that you need to be a little bit more effective if you are confronted with this situation. So at a very high level, I want to talk about some pheromones here because this is going to be a real driving force behind the causation of a laying worker within the colony. The queen obviously emits a number of pheromones. There's queen pheromones, there's brood pheromones, there's alarm pheromones. There's a ton of different pheromones. In fact, I'm going to do a dedicated pheromone episode to cover, you know, everything, to cover all of the pheromones that we would normally not necessarily that we would have a lot to do with as individual beekeepers. Like you can beekeep and be a great beekeeper and know very little about the pheromones. But some people like to kind of peel back the onion and get to the details of like what makes things work and how it works. So understanding all the pheromones that come into play with different things will really help you understand why the bees behave in certain ways, why you may have a lot of nurse bees and not as many foragers, or vice versa, you have too many foragers, not enough nurse bees, why you're getting certain behavioral responses. It's really pretty fascinating if you're into that. Some people are like, I don't really care, man. I just want to get some honey. I get it. But having those pheromones in the colony and having them, you know, in balance and equilibrium, you know, across all things, it helps to maintain the cohesion of the colony, making sure that tasks are getting done, the appropriate tasks are getting done at the right time of year, and just overall colony stability. With that, we know how important that the queen is in the hive. So what we're going to do in this episode, we're really just going to be talking about the queen pheromone. So I should step back a bit before I go too far. I think most people, if you're tuning in, this is episode one, you may not know this. But most everybody pretty much knows, like, the queen's pheromones are what drive most everything in the colony, right? The queen is kind of the foundation which everything else builds upon. Doesn't matter that there are other pheromones present, broadly speaking, in the absence of queen pheromones. So what we're going to talk about is queen mandibular pheromones. We're just going to call it QMP from here on out. There are, you know, different chemical compounds that come together to form this and all the other pheromones. So again, we'll dive into that deeper on the other episode. But QMP is going to confirm the queen's presence. It suppresses emergency behavior. So that desire they have to say, oh crap, we don't have a queen, we better make an emergency queen cell. The other, you know, just regular social order, worker role stability, making sure that workers are doing the things they should do. All these things are going to be kind of at the center of today's discussion. But the biggest, most important thing as it relates to a laying worker is the presence of QMP suppresses ovarian development in worker honeybees. Now, there is a bit more to it, but again, we'll dive into the pheromonal details of those things later on. But QMP, queen mandibular pheromone, and the presence of brood pheromone, those two things together are going to be the chemicals that are suppressing ovary development within worker honeybees. Now, an interesting thing to kind of make note of is there's also an egg marking pheromone that's released by the queen when she lays her eggs. This helps to positively ID the eggs that are being laid by her to differentiate between a laying worker. So if workers are working in the hive and for whatever reason they find this egg that doesn't have that, you know, egg marking pheromone from their queen, they know that something's wrong. They will destroy the egg, which is kind of neat. But when that pheromone and that signal is absent long enough, the physiology of the entire colony begins to change and shift, which then leads us into the conditions that create that laying worker. So let's talk about the specifics of what causes it. So we're talking prolonged queenlessness without a successful replacement. So it could be from swarming, it could be from injury, it could be from some type of a supersedure event that did not go well, that resulted in neither queen being viable, either the primary queen was potentially, you know, potentially dispatched early, the other one didn't come back from a mating flight, whatever may have happened under supersedure, it didn't work out. Maybe the beekeeper said, hey, I'm going to do a walk-away split, and one of those conditions occurred as a result of the split. All of those can create the scenario where, you know, there's no queen pheromone present. Now, if you're talking about a split or a situation where a catastrophic thing happened, maybe there was a swarm, there should still be some open brood left, and that brood pheromone will be present. But it's very shortly. Once that brood is capped, that pheromone's not going to be present. That open brood pheromone's not going to be present. The queen is now gone, and the clock sort of starts ticking. So the big question is, how long does this take? How much time do I have to get this resolved as a beekeeper? I kind of like to generically say that it's about the amount of time that you would need if you think about the colony that is in place when a swarm takes, you know, when a swarm occurs. Like, there is some open brood that's there, probably not young eggs and larvae necessarily, not definitely not eggs, but maybe some young larvae, of course. But they're going to try to restrict her. They want to shrink the queen up a little bit and get her flight ready. So they're going to withhold food. She's not going to be laying at much, or if anything at all, in preparation for her swarming flight. So you may not see as many eggs, but you will still see some developing young larvae. But you've got that period of time. Add on the 16 days it takes to go from beginning to end to create a new queen, and then mating flight time. So all of this is going to put you probably right around that 3-week time frame. So recognizing that total of 3 weeks, you probably have about maybe 18 or so of those days are without any brood present. But if that virgin queen goes out and has any issues on the mating flight and you don't get her from emergence to mated within like that 7 to 14 days on the high end, you're going to have some challenges potentially within the colony. No brood pheromone, no QMP, and again, ovaries are going to start to develop in those workers. Now, I say those workers, it could be a single worker. Here's another thing that's interesting. So the presence of QMP alone suppresses all of the workers. But once that suppressive tool, as well as the open brood and the brood pheromone, once those two things are completely absent, you could have one laying worker, two, 20. It is no real number. It's not one worker's ovaries develop and they all say, oh, cool, you're the queen now. It can be multiples. Now, one thing I did want to mention, and this is something that I think it's kind of cool. If you are doing a lot of queen mating, you're using queen cells and things, you do still want to keep the bees that are there working and keep them productive and keep things, you know, moving forward. And I wanted to throw this tip out before I forget about it. I use these in the mini mating nukes quite a bit. You can really use them anywhere, but you can get, you know, if you know that you are hopelessly queenless, like there's no path forward and you're having to take action, whether it be with a queen cell or maybe you're going to introduce some young larvae that they can use to make a queen. You can use queen pheromone strips, which contains a synthetic QMP. And again, this is going to help suppress that ovary development while they're trying to ramp things up, kind of rights the ship a little bit while they're waiting for that new queen. So just something to kind of keep in mind there with that. So we've established the conditions with which a laying worker situation could happen, right? We know that if there is no queen pheromone, there's no brood pheromone, and everything is pretty hopeless. Somewhere, like I said, 2.5, 3 week point, it could be as much as 4 weeks, but whatever it takes for them to develop. But somewhere in that space is when this is going to start happening. So what are some signs and things that you can look for to indicate to you, oh boy, I think we have a problem? So the colony is most certainly going to behave differently without their queen. So they might, you might hear like that roaring sound, like you might, it's just like a general rumble of the hive. They're just agitated. They can definitely be, you know, much more irritable. You'll see a queenless colony, like they're flying and they're doing things. You'll see bees coming and going, but they're just, there's a different kind of feel to things. They don't seem, they're not as active. They're not as productive. There's a lot more of them that are just kind of hanging out. Like they're just, they're literally a rudderless ship, right? They're out at sea, they have no rudder, and they're just waiting for, you know, for some guidance and direction. Some of the obvious kind of things that are much more visible is, of course, if you have a, if you're good at finding queens, no problem. If you have a marked queen and you go and you can't find your marked queen, you can't find any evidence of the queen, which we've talked about many times before, just because you can't find the queen, that's not a big deal. As long as you can look into a cell and multiple cells within an area and say, ah, but she is still laying. And again, the caveat to that here is there are times of year where she's not going to lay. So just because you don't have eggs doesn't mean you're queenless. But the presence of eggs and a good pattern and all those things is generally a pretty good sign. But if you see no eggs, no larvae, there's no capped worker brood anywhere, you know, these are kind of starting to provide some indicators for you that something's not right. Now, where it starts to become much more obvious is the first one I would say is you're noticing areas that used to be regular worker brood, and now all of a sudden this cell has been expanded for some reason, and there's a big fat piece of drone brood right in the middle, one single cell of drone brood. Very spotty, like a shotgun pattern all over the place, just these random drone cells with no rhyme or reason to their placement. The other one is the cells themselves. Now, think about anatomically looking at a regular worker honeybee and comparing that, the abdomen of the worker bee, to the abdomen of the queen. That queen's abdomen is probably about twice the length. It is much longer than the worker abdomen. When the queen deposits that cell, she places the abdomen down into the cell and drops the egg all the way at the bottom. Worker can't quite get to the bottom. So this is where you see the eggs are often attached to the side of the cell. So if you look in and they're not in the bottom, but they're kind of hooked on the sides of the cell, that's a dead giveaway. If you see multiple eggs per cell, I don't remember, and maybe I've seen it, maybe I wasn't paying attention, I don't know, but I don't ever remember seeing a queen lay two eggs in a cell. Now, if she did, because, I mean, you know, she usually goes in there and looks down in first, then turns around and backs in, drops the egg. But let's say for some reason she did, I'm pretty sure a nurse bee will come through and go, oops, we have too many, and just cannibalize it and leave one behind. I don't remember ever seeing that, but with a laying worker, you will absolutely see two, three, four, you know, you can see multiple eggs within a single cell. Definitely dead giveaway. So quick recap on that one, right? No visible queen, no queen cells, no capped or open worker brood, multiple eggs per cell, eggs often on the sides, shotgun or spotty type of brood pattern, and of course you're seeing only drone brood. There's no more worker brood. So to explain that one real quick in case that doesn't make sense to you, the queen bee, when she is mated, she stores all of the sperm that she needs to make new worker bees for the rest of her life. At the time of laying the egg, she makes the determination, am I dropping a fertilized egg that will become a worker, or am I dropping an unfertilized egg that will be a drone? Worker bees never have fertilized eggs, so they can only deliver the drone egg, or an egg that would become a drone that is unfertilized. So hopefully that helps with that a little bit.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Okay, so now we got to get into, what do you do? What are your options as a beekeeper to deal with the laying worker? The most important thing to do is remember that you don't just requeen this as if you're replacing a queen in a queenless colony. Once a worker has activated, her ovaries have activated, the other workers are going to feel like they kind of already have a queen. So if you introduce one, you could have some real life-altering consequences for that new queen. Specifically, they might ball her and kill her. Now, I will tell you, I have direct introduced a laying queen. This is sort of, I guess I would call it kind of some dumb luck. I didn't know any better. It was very early on. I had a laying worker, and I'm like, you know what? We're going to take this laying queen that I have. We're going to go ahead and just direct release her and, you know, and just put her in. And so I had told people for a long time, they were, hey, what do you do? I'm like, I just put a, you know, new queen in. It worked fine for me. I think that in that one scenario, it wasn't an issue. They recognized that strong queen pheromone. They're like, oh, wow, this is great, and accepted her right away. That was a very fortunate situation for me that it went the way that it did, but I would not take that chance. I do not encourage you to do what I did one time and kind of got lucky with. So now I'm going to throw a few options your way as to how you can address the laying worker, and you can kind of pick the one that makes the most sense for you. Now, option one, this is my preferred method, and I like to do it in conjunction with a split if possible. If not, we'll talk about the other way around it. But in conjunction with the split, what you're going to do is start with either boxes that are the same size as the colony. So let's just say you have a double deep and you've got 20 full frames and everything is fairly well packed out, but you just have a laying worker condition. I'm going to use a box that I've already got. It's a regular deep that has a solid piece of plywood secured to the bottom of it. There's no entrances or exits, and there are holes drilled in it with some hardware cloth for ventilation, but it's a no escape box. Once you put the lid on it, There's no way out for them. It's really just a transport box. So I will load a, you know, one, two, however many hive bodies I need to. I put them on a cart. I will load those frames out with all of the bees from this hive. I will then take them 80, 100, if I can go 150 feet away, or say, you know, 50 to 100 meters away, depending on your unit of measure. But I want to get them a good distance away from the hive, because these, the laying worker or laying workers, they are house bees. They're not foragers. They've never been outside. So when you dump them away from the hive, they're not going to know how to get back. The foragers that are part of that group, they will just fly right back to that hive. So this is why I like to use or like to do this in conjunction with the split, because now I'm getting all of my foragers back. I'm bringing over new frames of, full of brood. I'm basically almost bringing in like a nuke or a small nuke as part of my split. So they get all the foragers plus all of the benefits of the split. The original colony I'm splitting from now has reduced pressure to swarm, and it's kind of beneficial across the board. And of course, now that you've got brood pheromone present, laying worker is gone. Now you can go through whatever process you want to use to introduce your queen, whether it's a caged queen or a push-in cage or whatever you want to do. Just get your mated queen in there. Now, if you're not doing this method in conjunction with the split, my other way that I like to do this is I have apiaries in multiple locations. So I will take a colony from another location and at night close them up, bring them to the location where the laying worker colony was. Remember, I've gotten rid of all the bees on the inside, so the only bees left are foragers. So I will drop this colony in place. The foragers are now going to return back to this colony. They come in, they look around, they're going, huh, that's nice queen pheromone in here. We got brood pheromone in this place. It's pretty nice. Things are working well, and they won't think twice about it. They're back in business. They don't care. So that allows you to preserve your existing foragers. You can move that colony there short term just for that purpose, move them back, in a week or two. But that's a great method. Option one, like this first option, is kind of my preferred approach. Another option you can do is using a screened divider in between your queen right colony and the laying worker colony. Now, the idea behind this is that queen pheromone and active brood pheromone within that queen right colony is going to permeate upwards through that screen. You can also introduce a frame or two of open brood into the laying worker colony at the same time as you're doing this. And hopefully all of those together will allow the ship to kind of right itself. And then after probably, I would say after about a week, you should be able to remove that screen. And now you've just got the one single colony, realign the resources appropriately, and you're kind of back in business. But that is another approach that you can look at. The next option, option number three here, is you can add frames of open brood repeatedly to kind of reintroduce that brood pheromone, which again is hopefully going to suppress ovary development. But the real question with this is how much is enough, and for how long of a period of time do you have to do this for it to be enough to be effective? Because, time is nectar, right? If you're wasting time, if you're burning nectar flow time, trying to resolve these issues, that's a real challenge. But if you have these resource nukes available, or you have open brood frames you can get from somewhere, and maybe you put them into this laying worker colony, say on Sunday, maybe you add a couple more on Wednesday, maybe another one on Saturday, and then you bring your new queen in on Sunday. Maybe that would work. Maybe putting her into a push-in cage versus a standard, candy plug cage. Maybe that might be a better approach to get that scent permeating a little bit longer. But, if you can only spare one brood frame, do you put that in Tuesday, Wednesday, and then try to bring a queen in on Saturday? Again, it's a bit riskier whenever you're dealing with this. You've got to get rid of that laying worker. You've got to get those ovaries suppressed by pheromone. And that's where, again, it goes back to, I think the idea of using a push-in cage is still really solid on any method where you need to gradually get them adjusted again to that pheromone. Okay, and the last one I've got on this list is just combining them with the queen right colony. Now, I don't use the air quotes newspaper method for anything ever in hive combining. I have friends and people I know who will say, I really don't care which queen it is. I've got two colonies, I'm combining them, they'll figure it out. They will take two queen right colonies, stick them together. The colonies themselves will decide which queen pheromone they like the best. They'll dispatch the other queen, and now they have a queen right colony, and all is great in the world. That happens all the time. Beekeepers do it all over the place without issue. I do what I just call smoke and go. I will take a queen right colony, a queenless colony for at least a day or two, and then I will just smoke everything up and integrate the colony or integrate the frames into the existing colony. And I've never had a problem with that. Like the newspaper method that people, I've seen, so there are like 150,000 videos on YouTube about how to combine colonies with newspaper. I need to do a video on like how to combine colonies without newspaper because it's ridiculous. Anyway, this is a scenario. If you told me like, where would you ever use newspaper in a bee combining situation? This is actually one that would make sense if you were going to go this route. What you're going to do is take a couple sheets of newspaper, put it in between the two, the queen right and the laying worker colony, put a bunch of pinpricks, like little holes inside the newspaper, you know, from the top to the bottom. And what that does is it makes a starter hole that the bees can then kind of grab a hold of to start tearing things open gradually. This will then allow those workers from the laying, you know, from both colonies basically to start integrating together. And you don't have a situation where there's an overwhelming number of workers all of a sudden deciding, hey, that's a competing queen, let's get her. They will kind of trickle their way through. And after 3 or 4 days, everything is kind of combined. You can, you know, maybe the next weekend you pull off the scrap paper or whatever is left behind. That's the only scenario where it really doesn't, or where it really makes sense to go with that kind of approach. I mean, really, one, I mean, who actually has newspaper anymore? Like, I don't get a paper. I guess they maybe still print things. I don't even know. But it's just so much better to just do a smoke and go on most situations. But again, to me, like, I don't want to waste a week. I don't want to waste a week of like normal bee activity trying to join a colony and that has a laying worker and getting the ovary suppressed and going through all that. I would rather just shake them off to the side, take all their resources, give it to another colony and be back in business. But here's the beautiful thing about it. It's your apiary. They're your colonies. You know, go out and explore a little bit. Come up with a method that works with you for you. You know, whether you're replacing the queen pheromone with pheromone strips, open brood, or you're using push-in cages or a screened section that's adjacent to, above, left or right of a queen right colony. You just need to find a way to get the pheromones back in balance between the queen mandibular pheromone and the brood pheromone. That's all it comes down to. If you find a way to do that and to restore that balance, ovaries get suppressed, there's no more laying worker, and you just got to get your queen, you know, get a queen back in there in one capacity or another via combination, reintroduction, or even, you know, do a queen pheromone strip with a queen cell. Whatever you got to do, be creative and have some fun with it. But the key takeaway and the point to remember is when the pheromones are absent, bad things are going to happen. And it's not a super easy correction. You're not going to just drop a queen in and everything is fixed. You're going to have to get rid of the laying worker one way or another. So to kind of wrap everything up here, laying workers, they're not the most common thing that happen, but it can be a little intimidating. You can see these conditions and see the situation and kind of be like, oh crap, what do I do? You know, and under the wrong conditions, again, it can happen. And definitely the longer that your colony is queenless, the greater the likelihood is of it happening. But if you're able to recognize the signs, right, when you recognize like, geez, I know we've been queenless for a while, I'm waiting on whatever it might be. You know, it took me 2 weeks to realize they were queenless. I had to order a queen because I can't get one locally. We're going to be right around the 3 week point. Consider the queen pheromone strips. Consider bringing in a frame of open brood that could put that brood pheromone in there. You know, caged release of the queen, doing the push-in cage. Regular cage can still absolutely work. I mean, her pheromone can get in there and start to, you know, start to disseminate throughout the colony. That works as well. But the earlier that you're starting to recognize some of these things, the quicker you can take action, more decisive action, and reduce the likelihood of this, you know, kind of even happening in the first place. But the best news of all on the whole thing is it's absolutely correctable. It's fixable. All of the resources within the colony can still be used one way or another, whether you combine them with another colony, whether you use it as a base for a split after you've gotten rid of the potential laying offenders. Like, everything still gets used. You got to do a little bit of work, but it's not, definitely not the end of the world. Okay, so next week, I think I'm going to try over the next couple weeks here. We got a few things teed up. I've got to get my hive hugger video done. I've got all of my hardware here, and I need to get it installed into a couple of my hives, because what I'm doing first off is I'm going to get my heated frames, and I'm going to be testing my heated frames versus in a hive hugger configuration versus the heated frames in a regular uninsulated hive. And we're going to just kind of compare like resource utilization, how much energy, how much actual power is used to maintain certain temperatures. So I'm at least hoping to get the hive hugger kind of unboxing sort of video done within the next 2 weeks here. So we'll get that up as soon as we can. I'm going to start doing some yard prep videos. Last year I was doing like a selecting my space kind of thing. And I show like an overview map. It's a video on YouTube. I can probably drop that in this episode if anybody's interested. But that was sort of a how do I select, how do I choose where I'm going to put my hives. I'm going to be doing some cleanup and preparation of some equipment, some frame assembly, and just odds and ends. So I'll just put together videos for whatever I'm doing to get ready for the spring. And then I've got, I think, 5 packages coming to the house here in late March, early April, and we'll start documenting all that cool stuff. But remember, you can listen on youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies. You can listen to the podcast there. Like I said before, it's all commercial free outside of the YouTube ads that they're going to throw at you. And that's all I've got for you right now. So take care, be kind to one another. Remember that I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.